Welcome to Innovator Insights from Idea to Impact. I am your host, Henrik Johansson. I am the CEO and one of the founders of Gemba. Gemba helps entrepreneurs and companies to turn their great ideas into awesome new consumer products. Please stay to the end of the podcast and you'll learn how you can be our next guest on Innovator Insights from Idea to Impact. Let's do it. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Innovator Insights podcast, where we talk to successful entrepreneurs about their journey from the initial idea to creating a product and building a successful company with real impact. Today, we're super excited to have Patrick Bishop with us. He is the CEO and founder of Reroute Americas, is reinventing the supply chain in the restaurant industry with sustainable products. And more recently, and I'm super excited to learn more about this, he started a company called Reroute AI. So without further ado, Patrick, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me. Really appreciate it, Hunter.
Oh, thank you for being here. So before we talk business, why don't you give our guests a little bit of intro to yourself? Where do you come from? Where do you grow up? You're living, and what kind of makes you happy outside of work?
Yeah, so I was born and raised in the city of Chicago on the South Side. To any Cubs fans out there, I'm sorry, I'm a White Sox fan. You don't ever forget that. We're actually having a good season of football this year. Keep our fingers crossed. I made my journey out east. Worked for a company called Clark in Washington, D.C., and I was recruited to a large general contractor called Suffolk Construction and became executive vice president of that company. Time I left, we were doing about $1.7 billion. They're now doing $7 billion annually. They're, I think, top five contractors in the U.S. alone. But I learned a lot of the entrepreneurial spirit from the founder and the chairman of that company named John Fish. And I take a lot of what I learned, and obviously both good and bad, as we kind of formed this company. So it's very interesting. So
how did you get started? You started more in a corporate environment.
I chaired the expansion committee for Suffolk, and we did about four acquisitions, and I led those.
Okay.
And so I got a real taste of doing acquisitions. So I originally started an M&A firm in 2008 and oversaw about $1.5 billion in transactions over 13 years. And then COVID happened and valuations went, spiraling down. Money was tightening up. Honestly, owners were being unrealistic about their valuations at that point. So you kind of hit that bump in the road and, we'd done pretty well. I got married later in life. I've got, a beautiful wife. I got two beautiful young daughters, are 12 and 10.
That's great.
And so really wanted to find the next thing. I wasn't ready to retire. Mm-hmm. And I happened to be on a golf trip and out in Pebble Beach and found these agave straws. These are straws made from the byproduct of agave. And I tracked down the manufacturer, two young gentlemen out of Mexico. I flew down there, had breakfast with them, and bought a truck full of agave straws. And that's how we started.
Like that, huh?
Yeah, pretty much. And then went to my wife. We ended up selling our house to invest in the company. So we started in June of 2021, had first revenue. First sales were in December of 21. And then first revenue was January 2022.
So let me stop your second. So you bought a container full of straws before you even had a customer or business plan?
Yeah.
That's great. So there must have been a strong conviction there.
Well, it was interesting. So a good friend of mine named Peter D'Amelio, he was the former president of Cheesecake Factory. And I had called him as I was thinking about doing this. And he said, Patrick, a couple things. Like, COVID really exposed how dependent we are on China for supplies.
Yeah.
And if you can start bringing in sustainable stuff, I think this is the avenue to do it because people want this industry wants it and needs it. He's like, so you're in a niche because the broadliners, while they may carry it, they don't market it. So he kind of gave me the confidence to say, okay, we might have something here. So yeah, we started off with just straws made by Greenprint. And then they make this cutlery, which is still one of our fastest moving products. Mm-hmm. Also made from agave, and this stuff naturally degrades in landfills after 9 months, so it's very good for the environment. It's a great replacement for single use plastic. It's high quality, but now we carry over 500 different SKUs, and we've got some very big clients. So we do the Orlando Magic, the Tampa Bay Lightning, Camping World Stadium. We do Four Seasons at Disney, Waldorf Astoria at Disney. We've got some great properties, some great names behind us. And yeah, we're continually growing. And then when you're ready, I'll get into how we formed up the tech platform, because it's
Yeah.
very, very interesting how this came about.
Yeah, I would love to learn more about that. Before we go there, let's rewind a little bit. So you're making this big bet, you're buying container straws. I think you said you convinced your wife to sell the house to invest in the business. Tell me more about that, because that's a really interesting dynamic.
Well, it's so I love my wife, obviously, but that's a big risk, especially when you have two kids in school too, and tuition to pay for. But I've always had the philosophy that if you're not willing to bet on yourself, you're always going to fail anyway. So she knows how passionate I am. She knows how successful I was with the M&A world. And I said, this is the type of thing that if we do it right, we can create generational wealth. While making a difference too. And I said, you don't really get many opportunities in life to have that. You can have one or the other. There's the courage factor, there's the bravery factor to do it. Some people, I'm sure, have said that the stupidity factor of doing it. But if you want to win big, you got to risk big. And I think that's what we did. That's my wife goes, okay, she's like,
That's
I'll back
beautiful.
you.
That's
So
beautiful.
she goes out and to this day, she's out at appointments right now, still bringing in clients. So she does sales. So she knows everything that's on the line. So she's still heavily involved in the company.
Yeah. Well, that's wonderful. Thanks for sharing that. I mean, my experience have been, I've been fortunate enough to have the same supportive wife for 25 years, and through four startups, first one failed miserably, like weeks after we got married, and it was in the dot-com days. And then, the next two have been were successful, but went through the financial crisis and mass layoffs and lots. It takes having a supportive spouse. It's
Oh yeah,
an incredible gift.
without a doubt.
So it sounds like you do, and congratulations on that. So you from the business model perspective then, so you identify these niche, you have great insight on what the industry is going to want. And when we say the industry, that was the restaurant industry then. Is that correct?
More hospitality
Oh,
from an
hospitality, yeah.
overall standpoint, yeah.
So your sales movement initially was on the phones, outbound, reaching out to people. Can you tell me a little
Yeah,
more about that?
some of it was just traditional cold calling, because the one thing when you're talking about an actual product, hospitality, whether it's a restaurant, whether it's a hotel, the food and beverage, whoever's making that decision, they're going to want to see, touch, and feel the product before they ever make a decision on it, because, for lack of a better phrase, their ass is on the line if they bring in something that doesn't work, right? So a lot of it is face to face, and you can do the cold call emails, the cold called calling, but we also just physically walk in there sometimes with a bag of samples, see if, and sometimes you get them at the right time. Hey, listen, I got 5 minutes. And then, they really like the product or this, and then it becomes pricing, right? Because at the end of the day, they're not non-for-profits. They everything hits their bottom line as well.
And is your
So
product a little more expensive because of
no,
the
that's actually
recycling?
not. We
No.
if you compare us to the broadliners, we traditionally beat them by 21 to 23% for the same type of product. And part of it is because we partner directly with manufacturing. We bring it into our own warehouses. We have our own distribution, which we have our own trucks, our own fleets. So there's no middleman. So it's going right from the manufacturer to our warehouse to you. So it's not going third party or any of that type of stuff. So we're able to keep the fees down, and we run lean because that's why we target larger venues. You don't need three salespeople for a 60,000 seat stadium. You only need one. So you're able to keep the overhead low.
Yeah, that's great. So you started with this one factory in Mexico. Tell me more about, if you're willing, about how the supply chain has evolved since then.
Yeah, so again, with our whole thesis with Reroute Americas was to use more traditional North, Central, and South American companies, so there isn't that long gap in kind of lessen the dependence on China. So I would say about 95% of our products are made in these three areas, North, Central, and South America. We do have one product right now. It's like a palm leaf plate. It's very popular in the suites at a lot of the stadiums that we do, but that's made in India. So that's about the only product we bring in from Asia, or Eastern influence. So we really haven't been affected by tariffs, which has been great. That's another
Yeah,
big
that's
factor for
amazing.
us. We have not had to do a price increase since we started the company.
That's beautiful. Beautiful. And can you share a little bit about product development? You go from straws to 100, I think you said 150 SKUs. How
Over
did that
500. Yeah, so
or
over 500. Well,
500 SKUs?
it's interesting. So, as we've kind of expanded the portfolio, when we developed a relationship with these properties, whether it's a restaurant, they're like, hey, by the way, I love this. Can you guys get me this? Can you guys source me that? Can you guys source me that? So you start building out your portfolio. And then at the same time, especially as you take over stadiums, a lot of manufacturers that want their products in the stadium, then they start calling you saying, hey, by the way, we have an alternative to Sterno. Right? It does the same exact thing. It's a 6-hour wick and stem, but we can get it to you a lot less expensive than Sterno, even though it's not a name brand. So it's nice when they call you, right? So you don't have to keep on going out and finding it, stuff like that. So as we've expanded our portfolio, we've had a lot more access to local manufacturing that are willing to cut deals to get their product into high volume venues.
So it sounds like since 2021, it's been a fast moving train. You're growing fast, adding products. Has it been any ups or downs?
Definitely some down. So in 2022, we had all of Fort Myers Beach, which is Southwest Florida, which is a bunch of resorts, bars, hotels, restaurants. And we got hit by Hurricane Ian. We were doing about $90,000 a month on the beach, and it all was gone. Literally floated out into the Gulf that day, and it's never come back. So that was
Jeez.
about 40% of our business, and we were maybe a year old. And obviously, having sold our house and having our kids in school. And we brought the employees in, and everyone's kind of looking for a leadership moment, and what do you do? And I said, failure is not an option. I said, I have everything on the line. So we quickly pivoted, and we kind of opened the East Coast of Florida, so Miami, Lauderdale, West Palm. We started coming up to Orlando, which is obviously the most hotels in North America are in Orlando, right? And it's an entertainment hub. So we started spending some time up here. I started commuting from Naples to Orlando on a daily basis, which is a nightmare. It's 3.5 hours each way. And then we got noticed, and the Marriotts of the world started taking notice. And then I was invited to give a keynote speech to the Tampa Bay Chamber of Tourism. And the president of Tampa Bay Rays was there, got my card, and called me the next day and said, hey, listen, you've had so many stats on sustainability. He goes, I have a sustainability team and they don't have any of that information. Do you mind taking a meeting with us? And so they kind of figure out a way to create a partnership that we became the official sustainable partner of the Tampa Bay Rays, which allowed us to bring all of our products into the stadium exclusively. But also we got the marketing. Hey, and everyone's like, who is this reroute? Right. So then the Tampa Bay Rays put a press release on MLB.com. And since then, I can tell you right now, we're in conversations with 26 more professional teams. They've all called us for partnerships. So that has done its own selling, right? Because one of the things you realize is the number three impact for North American sports fans is actually sustainability. So number one is ownership management. Number two is ticket pricing, but three is actually sustainability. So these teams want to, they hear their message because they know if butts are not in the seats, that's a loss of revenue. So they have to be letting, their fan base know that we heard you, we're making an impact, and we're trying to bring more sustainable products in. So it's a natural sell for us. But it's great because they reach out to us. We don't have to reach out to them. So it's, you don't even need a salesperson for that. So.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Can you share a little more about the stats you mentioned? Is that
Yeah.
sort of
So,
proprietary sales pitch, or is that something you publish or
no, it's not
share?
proprietary at all. It's just information based that anybody does research can get it. So even hotels, right? So 63% of all tourists look for sustainable options when picking a hotel. So you should be promoting that in your sales and marketing literature, right? Which is, hey, listen, and that will get into what the tech platform helps do. But it's one of those things that this is people actively look for this stuff when they're making decisions. And then even better is that over 45% are willing to pay more to have sustainable options at their property. So, hotels need to hear that and need to make decisions based on that because it impacts the bottom line positively. So if you're not listening to and you're not looking for that opportunity, then you're just as good as the guy down the street who's doing the same thing that you're doing. But maybe your room is $10 cheaper. But by the way, maybe you offer $25 more. But hey, by the way, we have all these sustainable products in our properties for you. So those are real factors when making a decision. And we use that in our sales because it is a game changer for properties.
I love that story. How, and I don't know if you were excited to go to that Chamber of Commerce meeting or not, but the fact that you went there and you showed up and you gave a presentation and that leads to one major league sports team and then to all of them. That's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, you never know who's going to be in the room, right? So,
Yeah.
and just like we've developed a great relationship with Marriott corporately, and they are very ESG driven, right? So they have mandates, they have certain things they want to do. But at the same time, you look at the, where there's a lot of waste in hospitality too, which is, you don't need to carry 45 different items when 21 could accomplish the same thing, right? Like, and that's where you kind of look at the overusage of, hey, why have a 6x6, an 8x8, and a 9x9 takeout container? You can get rid of the 8x8, for instance, right? So take one more SKU off it. Now you're not spending as, you're not carrying as many items, and there's not as much waste. So besides just the product, it's the buying behavior which needs to change also
Yeah.
to impact the bottom line as well as impact the environment.
Yeah. So, Patrick, have you seen a shift over the last year or so? Because, ESG was hot and sustainability, and it seems like it's taken the back seat, at least, in some circles. Have it changed what your customers are looking for, or are they still on that same path?
No, they're still on that same path, and I got a bunch of television and radio interviews after President Trump came out and said, I'm tired of paper straws and I'm getting rid of those. And the good news is I don't carry a paper straw, and we don't. And part of it is because it is expensive. I always say the intent was good behind the paper straw, but it's a little ironic. You're cutting down a tree to save the environment, right? And then finally, the studies came out that the adhesive that they're putting in that is very toxic, right? So you're actually doing more harm than good. And then let's face it, none of us like a product that breaks down halfway through your drink, right? So we've never offered that product, so it's not a big deal. But I corporations still have ESG mandates, so as long as we stick with people that truly want to make an impact on the environment without impacting their budget, and we've demonstrated that we can do that. I mean, we do several hospitals, and you'd be surprised. A lot of hospitals are some of the biggest abusers of styrofoam because it's a very inexpensive product, and they move a lot of volume on it. But there are several of styrofoam items that were less expensive on a fiber, which is bamboo or sugarcane fiber product, cheaper than styrofoam. And the hospitals are amazed by that. So we've shown that you can move towards sustainability without having to be pay more, right? So that's been the biggest myth, and that's been driven mostly by the broadline distributors because they have so many different SKUs they got to move. Hey, let's just start the narrative that going sustainable is more expensive. Let's keep on moving our plastic because it's less expensive. We have better margins in it, and we have a ton of it to move.
Yeah. That's amazing. Because yeah, that is definitely the narrative, and I have to admit, even though I'm in the industry, that still is sort of the perception that most people have that yeah, sustainability is great, but it's more expensive, How do you keep the cost as low as you do? Of course, you mentioned earlier you cut out the middlemen, you go direct, you keep a lean organization, but would you say that the production process is still more expensive than the non-sustainable?
Listen, at the end of the day, they're using resin and pellets just like you are plastic. So the machines don't have to change. It's just the pellet that you're using for it. So it's, and again, if you remember, plastic is actually a byproduct of petroleum. So that has a more, and as well as if it's being shipped overseas, so you have transportation costs, you've got timing costs on that. And you actually have to watch the futures on petroleum because that's going to affect, polypropylene and polyethylene type of products because it's a commodity at the end of the day. And so the resin for agave is also a commodity, but at the same time, it's literally a byproduct from a plant that's already being composted. So all they're doing is taking the fibers and recreating a new resin and making a straw out of it instead of throwing it back into agave field. So that's, I mean, that's literally the ease behind it.
And the supplies, I mean, it's not unlimited, but there's plenty of it, I assume.
So our latest survey was there's 27 years of agave supply available right now. If they stop planting it right now, there's 27 years left of it. So hopefully I'm retired and maybe sold the company by then before I have to worry about it, but we're good now.
And then you make it from this stuff that doesn't go into the tequila. Is that how it works?
No, so what happens is, so an agave plant, it's about a 5 pound bulb when it matures. So once you pull the bulb up, they break off the leaves, and what they do is they'll press them, right? And then they heat them, and that's where the extractment comes out for the alcohol. But then the fibers typically would be thrown back to the farmers for compost. Now all they're doing is taking those fibers and bringing them to the manufacturer now, I mean, like Jose Cuervo is a big supporter of the byproduct and donates a lot of it to small manufacturers that are trying to get into this game. But yeah, I mean, you're seeing a real repurpose of the compost material, but it's post tequila production. So it's not separate, but it's something quite honestly that you'll find out that hopefully Southwest farmers, because it's certain climate that agave can grow in, but it does have the ability to be micro farmed. If you ever got into that, specifically for manufacturing, you can micro farm it. I know that's not a sexy terminology, but there is reality for it. But to be competitive against Mexico.
Okay, great. Well, thanks for sharing that. Let's shift gears a little bit to reroute AI. I watched the sort of your video introduction and loved the positioning. It reroute AI knows what you need before you do. I think that's great.
So tell us more. That was really born out of. So out of the distribution model, right? So we had a client in Orlando who's going to remain nameless at this point, but they would have me go over there twice a week and do inventory with their inventory manager. And to me, that was a red flag, which is why do you have an inventory manager and making me come over? So they would manually count the inventory. He'd write it down in Excel and then he'd place an order with me. And he would be ordering stuff that's been sitting on the shelf for 3 weeks. And, I don't want to shoot myself in the foot because it's my product that he wants to order again. But as a business person, it didn't make sense to me. So I said, why are you ordering that? And he goes, well, if we get busy this weekend and I run out, what's going to happen then? And I'm like, well, I don't think you're going to run out. It's been sitting here for 3 weeks. So I kind of thought that was an anomaly. So it started to get my brain working. But then I called Marriott. And like I said, we have a great relationship. So I went to several other properties and I said, take me through your inventory management procurement place. And it is very antiquated in the hospitality industry. It is manual counts. It's loaded up in Excel. It's sent to purchasing. Purchasing then makes a weekly order based on what they think they're going to need. So I kind of had what I considered a breakthrough moment. And I started writing some code and then realized quickly that it's way above my pay grade. So luckily for me, my chief technology officer now ran the Magic Band platform for Disney World and then oversaw Disney World's AI program for Amazon Web Services. And so I took him to lunch one day and I said, this is what I'm trying to do. Do you think you could help? He called me the next day. He goes, I haven't gone to bed yet. Let's meet up. This is what we're going to create. So we created a platform that does three things. So it looks at your occupancy, vacancy rates. It looks at seasonality. It'll look at weather. It'll look at ticket sales for an arena. And what it'll do, it will predict what your order should be. It's going to, on a weekly basis, it sends it to purchasing. Purchasing either agrees with it, they can decline it, or they can add edit. They hit submit. It comes back to us for distribution or goes to your preferred distributor and places your order for the week. That's the first thing it does. And so, because what we saw was the overorder, underordering wasn't being based on any information other than gut feel. So let's use real-time data to get us that information. Orlando, a more sustainable environment. They hit 20,000 fans with that message, right?
Yeah.
And then more importantly for hospitality, like I said, Marriott, Hilton, Hyatt, they all have ESG mandates. So now they can report back to corporate saying, here's how each property is doing in terms of compliance with sustainability standards, right? And then we're building a platform to carry more than just disposables, right? So it's built out that it can do janitorial items, that it can do housekeeping. So it can expand throughout the portfolio so you can get a real true snapshot of how sustainable each property is going to be. And the third part is the actual inventory management itself. So what will happen is when your order gets delivered and you scan the items off, it'll create your virtual warehouse. And then every time you pull a box off, and get it and scan it, it'll automatically deplete from your inventory. So you get rid of the manual counts. And then you could set up an automatic reorder too. So for instance, we bring in 20 cups and you say, hey, listen, the minute I get down to 10 and the system scans it, then bring me 10 more. So you don't have to constantly waste all these man hours walking your stock room and writing everything down. It's being taken care of for you. So that's what we created. It's gotten huge buzz. We just launched this month with Marriott and Hyatt. We're in current discussions with Hilton, but they see this as a game changer in the industry. And inventory management is nothing new. I mean, we do it ourselves already, right? So I can log in, I see how much product we have, which warehouse it's at, and when we got a reorder and stuff like that. But no one was doing it for their customer. And people ask me, well, are you afraid that someone's going to copy this? I'm like, well, that's a sincere form of flattery, right? But Sometimes you got to be first to market. Like I said, we have submitted our patent on it, and it's not to, so we'll go after people, it's to protect us. But yeah, this is another way that we're affecting the industry. And the way that I say that is it's a SaaS model. So it's a subscription-based platform. You pay, you know, you sign up for a year, you pay it monthly. But the idea is it's going to reduce your over-ordering and overstocking by 20, 30% annually. So if your paper budget is $750,000 a year, imagine the saving you 150 grand. You're going to look like a hero. So
That's amazing.
It's real impactful that we did. And I say it this way, we're a distribution company that created some tech, and we're going to quickly be a tech company that happens to do some distribution just because how quickly that SaaS model can scale.
Yeah. What blows me away is that you just started it and you're already selling it into big organizations like Marriott and Hyatt. You would think that there were the hurdles to get in there and get through their IT departments and you know, integration and approvals would be massive, but somehow you've been able to navigate that.
First of all, it is, but I want to create our AI development team. So obviously we're building this in-house, and that's what we did encounter was the first concept was to have a hardware-based type of thing. And that's where IT with corporate is like, absolutely not. We don't want plugins. We don't want this. We don't want hardware. So this is how great of a team that we have is they were able to create it as an app, and it's all software driven. So there is no and the only difference that we're doing with some properties is they don't want the app on an employee's personal phone. Mm-hmm. So in that's the case, we supply the phone with the app already preloaded. They reimburse us for the cost of the phone. We don't do any markup on it. So those are the ways we were able to maneuver around to quickly get the approvals. And then the insurance requirements are what they are. And this is what they want you to carry. You either decide to do it or not. And you know, Marriott, you know, one of the biggest hotel chains in the world, they had their mandates for insurance. We met them. So we're good to go. So yeah, I mean, again, credit to the team for figuring out the workarounds to get this thing up and launched. But yeah, it's constantly being developed. I mean, we don't want to, you know, like I said, we just launched it this month. We're not pretending it's a perfect system. I mean, I think models right now show that the predictive model is at 95% accuracy. We're trying to get it to 97 just because you're never going to get 100% accuracy. And that'd be a falsehood if I ever tried to say that. At 97%, you can still maintain that 20 to 30% reduction in overall spend. And again, if there's other things that the sustainability platform will do, one of the things I mentioned to you too, which is it'll look at everything you're ordering. And besides just suggesting products to switch out, it might say you can remove this product, right? So that's going to save you budget wise because it's doing, you're ordering identical, almost similar products. And you can, like I said, you can get a smaller batch in, if to be efficient. So it's a very neat platform and concept. We're very proud about it. And yes, it's exciting. It's an exciting time.
That's wonderful. Well, congrats on all the success with that and the evolution of the business. It's very, very impressive, and the positive impact you're having on the world and sustainability is amazing too. So what's ahead in the year ahead? You're super busy. You're running two different businesses. What are you excited about in 2026?
I'm going to be excited once we get the platform where we think it's like I said, Marriott and Hyatt are willing and able to kind of, and they understand the benefit too, which is almost it's customized for them by getting in on the ground floor. But once we get that necessary feedback, I want to see how quickly we can scale the SaaS platform. And from a true sustainability standpoint, one of the things I really want to tackle, and my AI team always looks at me and shakes their head whenever I come in the room because, oh God, here he comes again. And it's like, so in hospitality alone in North America, $1.3 trillion of non-used food gets thrown out every year. So I have told the guys my long-term goal is to get that number down, which is if we can get predictive ordering based on your produce and poultry or protein, and we can reduce that. Imagine $1.3 trillion if you were able to reduce that by 20%. The economic impact you have, not only on the economy, but on the environment. I mean, that's 20% less in a landfill because even though food is compostable, 85% never gets composted. It gets thrown in a landfill. So, I mean, anything we can do to move the needle on sustainability, that's where I get excited about. But with this platform, it is built to kind of take on everything that you have to inventorize, right? If you put it on a shelf, if you have to track it, the system is designed that it can do it for you. But these guys know I have big, hairy, audacious goals, the BHAGs, right? And that's one of them, which is I'd love to see this platform at the end of the day being able to do everything that you bring into hospitality. But like I said, if we can eliminate 20% waste on the food, that's
That's
farmers are going to
incredible.
love it. Environment's going to love it. Obviously, CFOs are going to love it. So that's the impact we want to have.
Yeah. Would you mind sharing how, where did this focus of sustainability and doing the right thing, having a positive impact on the world, is that something you've had with you forever, or did it come from some specific place or person?
You know, it didn't come from a specific place or person, but it was one of those things. You know, I'm 51, about to be 52. Grew up on the south side of Chicago. Sustainability was never talked about, right? It was, you know, cigarette butts on the sidewalk and plastic everywhere and styrofoam. I mean, it just no one cared about it, or at least they didn't vocalize that they cared about it. I think once we started the company and as I kind of dove into the products and the things that are out there. And then, you know, what we did is we volunteered for a lot of, since, you know, we're in Florida where there's a lot of coastline. So we did some coastline cleanup. And then you see the amount of litter, plastic, and styrofoam that's thrown in our oceans. I mean, we got five floating islands larger than the state of Texas, your state, that are floating in our oceans, right? So as I did that, and with my 12-year-old and 10-year-old daughters, you know, they see how passionate we've become about it. But it's like, hey, listen, this is not just a for-profit business. We actually can make some, you know, effective change by doing it. So I think that's where the passion really came from when you start doing the research and realize, man, we could and should be doing a lot better. And that's kind of where my mission comes from.
That's great. Great. Well, this has been wonderful. We're almost at time, so I wanted to just wrap up with asking you if you have any advice for our listeners. A lot of them are entrepreneurs or aspiring entrepreneurs. Over your years as an entrepreneur, what are some of the advice you'd give them?
Don't stop. Don't stop. I mean, you know, to your point, your first company may fail, but if you still have an idea, try it again. You're going to learn from failures. You're going to learn from things like I can't control the weather, but the weather nearly killed my business. So you've got to learn to pivot. And don't be afraid to take advice. You know, I live my professional life on two philosophies. First is if you're the smartest person in the room, you're in the wrong room, right? So surround yourself with people that are smarter and better you in the areas where you're weakest, right? That way you're gonna have a complete team. So I always believe that. And then the second thing, you can ask anybody in my company. I do not ask anybody to do anything in this company that I have not done. When we first started off, I was doing deliveries in the back of my pickup truck with my two daughters on a Sunday. I'll come in and sweep the floor at the warehouse if I think it looks inappropriate. There's no job that's too small for me. At the same time, there's no job too big for me. So, and I think people respect that from leadership. I know I certainly did as I was coming up. You know, I never liked the philosophy of being, you know, do what I say, not as I do. I think you got to lead by example. So, I think if you're an entrepreneur, keep that in the back of your mind as you're growing your team that they're watching you. And if they see you're driving your BMW and you're taking a lot of vacations, guess what? They're gonna realize they're doing the majority of work. You know, where's your leadership at? So I'm very cognizant of those things, but that's the advice I would give. Surround yourself with smarter people and lead by example.
That's great advice. Patrick, it's been a pleasure. Thanks for being a guest on the podcast. Thanks for all the great work you're doing and sharing your story. Really appreciate it. And I know our audience will too.
Thanks for the opportunity. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Patrick. Have a great day.
Cheers.
Take care. All righty, this is Henrik Johansson again. Thank you so much for listening to Innovator Insights from Idea to Impact. If you are a successful product entrepreneur or you work in a company that creates new products and you have an interesting story about how you developed your product and brought it to market, and you would like to be on this podcast, please go to Gemba.com and click on podcast and you can fill out an application to be on the podcast. We'd love to hear from you. If you liked this podcast, you enjoyed this interview, and we would greatly appreciate if you would share it on social media. You can just do a quick screenshot with your phone and text it to a friend or post it on socials. If you know anyone that you think would be a great guest, please tag them on social media and let them know about the show and include the hashtag Innovator Insights. And would love to see your posts and any suggestions you have to guests. That's how we find most of our guests, from suggestions from other listeners. We're regularly putting out new episodes and new content to make sure you don't miss any episodes. Please go ahead and subscribe. Your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show and it means a ton to me and the team. We really appreciate it. Do you want to know more about Gemba, me, or the podcast? Please go to gemba.com and click on podcast, or you can follow me on LinkedIn. That's where I do most of my posts. Again, thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next time. Have a great day.